Brandon, if you can tell me who sings this song, I will give you a dollar.
Creedence Clearwater Revival, CCR.
I was thinking, like, wouldn't Brandon, of all people, know
who sings this song? Maybe just threw it in there.
Because he's the producer.
No, I know that, but maybe just threw it in there.
I got faith in you, Brandon. Of course you know the song.
Of course.
He's always on his 80s.
And of course everyone knew that was Creedence Clearwater.
Yeah. It's one of their top five hits.
Yeah, dude.
I'm just testing.
You got to come with something stronger, though, if you're going to test
it. Reminds me of Remember the Titans all the time.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Don't you dare put that up. Let's go to the phone lines. My man, Mike Johnson from We Are Backroads Radio, joined just right now. Former Alabama player, title winner, and he knows his SEC football. Mike, good afternoon to you, brother. How are you?
I'm doing really good, man. Getting ready for this third Saturday in October. I used to love playing in this game. Now I love watching it.
Man, let's start off right off the bat with this. As a player, and I've spoken to many Tennessee folks and players, and I've gotten responses from Alabama players, but like personally for you, going into this ball game, and you know, you're from the deep south just like I am, and you know, you kind of understand that this is a big time game for the fan bases, but what does it mean to the players?
Well, I think first and foremost, when you sign up to play at a place like Alabama or Tennessee, you always want to uphold the legacy that came before you. I mean, that's all I ever heard about when I got to school was, Bear Bryant and the times that came before me. And I know that Tennessee, you know, their players are very similar in the way that they look at that program, the way they look at that history. I mean, these are historically the two top programs in the SEC, and, they continue to be top-level programs. So when I got to Alabama, I don't know if I understood it right away. I was redshirted back in 2005. We won a game by a field goal against Tennessee that year, I believe.
Yep.
And then in 2006, I think it finally hit me. We went on the road to Knoxville there to Neyland Stadium. We lost in a game where Mike Shula decided to kick a field goal from the one-yard line. I'll never forget it. And, man, we didn't end up faring very well that year. Mike Shula got fired. So I think it finally hit me at that point that this was a game a lot of Alabama fans took a lot of pride in. It's a lot of, you know, a game a lot of Tennessee fans definitely took a pride in. I saw that up close and personal in Neyland Stadium. And it's just one of those good old-fashioned historic rivalries that when both teams are good, there is nothing like watching that third Saturday in October, man. There's nothing like lighting up that cigar and being able to smoke one with your friends. And I know that Tennessee fans out there feel the same way. It was just, It was fun to be a part of and fun to play in that stadium for sure.
Mike, looking at the success from last week, Tennessee, you know, going into Auburn and getting a much needed win. What does this do? Speaking from a player's perspective, what does this do for the rest of the season when you're kind of they were in that lull and you know trying to build back to Tennessee values and get back to you know the glory days and Pruitt trying to come in. And, you know, build something and create a new mentality. What does that do for a player when you get that big win like that?
And, man, it's just huge. It gives you such a shot of adrenaline because the last thing you want to do is have a hard-nosed coach come in that's tough love, that's yelling at everybody, trying to change everything that you've known about your entire system there at Tennessee, trying to change it all, trying to change the mentality, the outlook, trying to change, obviously the systems. And then it starts to wear on you because the reason you start to buy in is because victories come. It was the same way with Nick Saban. It's like, you know, this guy is yelling at us. He's screaming. We want to buy into the program, but at what point do we start winning? And then when the wins start to come, that's when you say, okay, it's actually working. We are actually building towards something. I'm not doing all this craziness and getting yelled at and practicing in the heat and practicing, you know, from sun up to sun down. Just to lose games every weekend. And so you beat a team like Auburn, you beat a top 25 team. I think I saw a stat where it was maybe the first win against an SEC West team for Tennessee since 2010.
Yep. Yep.
Man, all those stats that are wrapped up in that victory and that bring things home for Tennessee and those players, it's such a shot of adrenaline. It allows you to go out, you get that extra pep in your step at practice. Had they lost a few games in a row and had they been headed into this Alabama game, let's be honest, their heads would have probably been hanging decently low. But you get that victory last week and all of a sudden you say, hey, you know what? What we're doing is working. Let's trust in the system. Let's trust in the program. Let's trust in Coach Pruitt. And let's go out and get another one. Let's make sure we're continuing to do the same things that got us here. And I know that Coach Pruitt is definitely preaching that this week. Hey, listen, You might have got one, but don't forget why you got that one. Let's continue to practice very hard, and I expect that's what they're doing right now.
Kind of last question on this game. We might follow up later down the line with a Butch Jones question for you. But when it comes to Tennessee in this ball game, defensively, the way they play, look, they're forcing turnovers and they're getting pressure. And, you know, you see Coach Pruitt, you know, calling blitzes right before the snap, you know, and it's interesting to watch for Tennessee fans because they haven't seen that for a while. So I understand their excitement and also just they're kind of lost in what the world they just saw. But when it comes to the game Saturday and how Nick Saban is I think we both can agree that Tua is not the healthiest quarterback right now with his knee, and they would probably like to get him as much rest as they can before their big matchup with LSU. How much do you think that factors in Saturday? And in your honest opinion, can Tennessee keep this under a 28-point ball game? Like, can they come in here and actually give Alabama something for the first half, maybe three quarters?
Well, I think the answer to your second question has a lot to do with your first one. I think true. Listen, if you get a healthy dose of Jalen Hurts and you get a healthy dose of that running game that, honestly, in my opinion, you know, it just has not been yesterday's Alabama running game. I mean, they've done, obviously, an explosive offense through the air. But I look at Alabama's offensive line, and I think they're more geared toward pass protection at this point because that's what they've been doing for the majority of the season. They've been pass protecting. Damian Harris finally, you know, ripped off a 100-yard game, but this Alabama football team has got some work to do on the ground at least. So I think if you have Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, the answer, in my opinion, is probably not for Tennessee. I don't know if they keep this one close and spreads at 28.5. And honestly, I'd be hard pressed to not take Alabama in that if Tua Tagovailoa was 100% and was a starter. But I definitely think there's a big chance that you get Jalen Hurts and a healthy dose of Jalen Hurts. You know, listen, Tua Tagovailoa played a ton last year in this game. He threw the pick six that a lot of people remember, the Rashawn Golden incident. I don't know if you'll get a lot of Tua Tagovailoa if he does start, but I look for a very similar timeshare to where Tua comes in, plays a quarter and a half, tries to get Alabama up, and then you're going to see a healthy dose of Jalen Hurts and a lot of clock running off. I know that Tennessee, and listen, I don't want to anger people up in Knoxville, Tennessee gets a huge win against Auburn, but in my opinion, that had as much to do with Auburn and Jared Stidham and their struggles offensively as it did to do with, Jeremy Pruitt's defense coming around. And so if Alabama's playing to their stride and Tua Tagovailoa is healthy back in the quarterback position and he's able to, you know, get his feet set and really use those knees, then I expect Alabama to score a ton of points this weekend. And I just think that right now at this point, I think Tennessee's football players and their football team have really bought into what Jeremy Pruitt's doing. I think they're playing tough. I think they're playing smart football. I think Jared Garantano is not taking a ton of gambles at the quarterback position. But they're also, you know, let's just be honest, they're battling some talent issues. You're going to get a team coming in this weekend that is not battling those same issues. And so Alabama should be able to score a number of points offensively if Tua Tagovailoa is at the helm.
You talk about Alabama and their talent and Tua, and I've asked a lot of people the same question. I'm going to ask you the same question. Is there anybody that can actually going to be able to compete with Alabama with Tua as quarterback for the next couple of seasons? Is Alabama the only team that can really stop this train right now? I don't think a Clemson or Ohio State or any of these teams are in the same level. Alabama's been so dominant for so many years, but they haven't been as dominant as they are now on offense, and that's just scary. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's frightening. Listen, if I was going to say, you know, are they going to run the table right now, I'd probably guess yes, but I'm not as confident as a lot of people are that they're going to run the table. And you know, listen, I was a part of a 14-0 football team. We played a Tennessee team that year that was not very good under Lane Kiffin, and yet it took a field goal block at the end for us to be able to win. It's hard. It's hard to go undefeated in SEC football and in college football. You know, I don't know how much of a scare they're going to get to Tennessee this weekend, but I look at LSU's defense, what they did to Georgia down in Baton Rouge. I look at the fact that Greedy Williams and Christian Fulton and Grant Delpit and John Battle, that entire secondary for LSU, they can match up with Alabama's wide receiver corps. Now, you flip it around and say, can Alabama run the ball? Maybe they have a little more success. Maybe, Dave Aranda backed some people off in that LSU football game. But I have a hard time. You know, Alabama could easily finish 12-0, and they could get in the SEC title game and get blindsided by Georgia or, you know, another team from the SEC East. So it's tough for me. I don't foresee anybody really beating Alabama until, you know, possibly the college football playoff. I think that an Ohio State team would give them a ton of fits. I think that if Oklahoma's there, Oklahoma could give them a fit. But as far as the schedule goes right now, it's just hard to say. And I don't say that to fall in line with people that say, oh, you know, they're unstoppable. Because it seems like every year we have that conversation. Last year at this point, that Alabama's unstoppable. 2 years ago at this point, Alabama's unstoppable. And yet they always seem to come out with a loss on the end of that record, only for, you know, for one time in Nick Saban's career. So I don't see it happening, but you know what? It don't get you till it gets you. And right now for Alabama fans, it won't get you till it gets you.
Okay, looking at Auburn, and I was in Auburn the last couple days, you know, last weekend, and talking with some folks and some different writers and folks in the athletic department, man, they, you know, I'm not going to use name, but they're not happy, Mike. And the fan base is kind of, they're starting to become unhinged. That play Saturday just sounded like what an 11 a.m. kickoff should sound like, just kind of dead. Tennessee fans were excited, you know, but that's just because, you know, it's a destination trip. And also the team started playing good. But overall, and I've spoken to a couple people about this, and now Brandon Marcello has come out and reported this, that money wouldn't be a factor in the decision with Gus Malzahn. If they think he can't turn this thing around, then money wouldn't be a factor with that huge buyout. What is your take on the whole Auburn situation? Because, you know the fan base, and just as much as I do, and it seemed like they had expectations of, hey, look, we're going to be fighting for a championship this year, and now they're like, okay, maybe we're just rebuilding. What is your take, and can they pull the trigger on Malzahn this year?
Yeah, I actually, you know, listen, I talked to some people that are, you know, pretty high up there with the Auburn fan base as well, and I talked to some of them on Monday. And their answer to me was exactly the same as what's come out with Brandon Marcello. I mean, it's not going to be an issue. And this is not a contract that was negotiated by the AD. This was a contract that was negotiated by the president. And, you know, I think that there's definitely some buyer's remorse there. And, you know, this is sad. I've been mentioning it on my show all week. And Jordan Rodgers tweeted this out earlier in the week about their offense and just the lack of completions in the middle of the field from 8 yards to 44 yards past the line of scrimmage and inside the numbers of this offense. Jared Stidham has 6 completions this year. It's about a 36 by 36 box. Right there in the middle of the field, he's got 6 completions on the entire season. And yet, behind the line of scrimmage, he's got like 50 completions. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of Auburn fans that look at it and say, you know what, it's fun when the razzle-dazzle is there. It's fun when you have a quarterback that can run around and make plays and run the double reverse passes and complete things like that. But when they're not hitting, this football team looks ugly. Gus Malzahn's offensive scheme looks ugly. Chip Lindsey looks ugly. The offensive line looks ugly. And so I think that's what they're dealing with right now, just an offensive unit that is completely out of sync. I mean, nothing is going right. The offensive line's not blocking very well. The running backs are not elusive at all. Jared Stidham's been missing throws and turning the ball over. And Ryan Davis, a guy who was a top-flight wide receiver a year ago, has just not shown the same flashes and ability you know, that you thought you'd see from him this year. So, listen, I don't know what the end game is for Gus Malzahn this year at Auburn. I look at it and say, boy, you'd be hard-pressed to pay what I think is a $36 million buyout at this point. I think it goes down after December 1st or January 1st.
It does, December 1st.
But it's just, it's so tough. It's so tough to pay that much money these days in college football. I would be shocked if they move on from Gus Malzahn, just simply from the fact that, and maybe you can answer this for me, I don't know who they go get. I don't know who Auburn's going to pay $36 million to Gus Malzahn and then go sign, you know, another top-flight coach on. You know, Gus Malzahn's shown the ability to beat Nick Saban's defenses, and I just don't know who they're going to get on the open market that can do that.
Would Kiffin take $2.5-3 million to come back to the SEC?
You know, that's such an interesting name. Somebody else brought that up to me, and I think he definitely would. I think Kiffin would love $2.5-3 million to be in the SEC. I think more so, I think Kiffin would like to be at Auburn coaching against Nick Saban. I think that he would eat that up, and he would eat up that spotlight. I don't know if it would be the right situation for him, but I definitely think he'd give it a hard look, that's for sure.
Talk about the right situation and being shocked out of the SEC. LSU, Everybody knew they were good. Obviously, the questions about the offense, quarterback, always been there, kind of the same old broken record each season. Was it time to start? Actually, he's been the joke of the conference. He's been a joke of college football. He's constantly criticized. It's time to start putting a little respect on Ed Orgeron's name and actually respect what – and do they have something going there? Are they a legitimate threat to get into this college football playoff?
Listen, I don't think there's any doubt that Ed Orgeron deserves respect. I made the comment earlier in the week that Ed Orgeron going for 5 fourth-down conversions not only changed the landscape of that game, it changed the entire landscape of the conference. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you got, you know, Florida and Kentucky are back in discussion in the East. LSU stays in discussion in the West. It just it changed everything. And Ed Orgeron, you know, for all the holes that you could possibly poke in what he does, it's working right now. The move to Steve Ensminger has worked. The ability to recruit Joe Burrow has worked. Braden Fajoco is a Texas Tech transfer. That has worked. Terrence Alexander, the Stanford transfer in the back end, that has worked out. They now have a top-flight recruiting class. I haven't looked recently, but I think they're in the top five recruiting right now. So, you know, you're going to pay a premium. If you have Ed Orgeron as head coach, you're going to pay a premium to a guy like Dave Aranda, who's making, you know, $2 million a year, to have these coordinators under him. But as far as the CEO style of coach and a coach that can get guys to play extremely hard for him, I don't think there's any doubt he's top flight right now. I mean, he's making the right decisions. He's he knows the situational football games as much as anybody in the SEC. I think he deserves credit, and I think that LSU, honestly, they have a legitimate shot of doing this. You know, Bama's going to go in. I mentioned earlier, Bama's going to go in, high-flying offense, throw the ball around, but the team that runs the ball and can stop the run down in Death Valley usually does a good job of winning the football game. I want Bama to get better at running the ball before they get to that game against LSU, before I feel more comfortable. So, yes, LSU, in my opinion, definitely a legitimate threat if they can just avoid some of the letdown games that will be on their schedule.
And last thing real fast, not really a question, more of an agreement with you. I saw on your Twitter page, you must be a big Office fan. Yes, Pam Beasley is indeed hot. So I do agree with you. So you can go back and tell your producer that he is definitely wrong.
I appreciate that, man.
I got your back. I got your back.
It's been an ongoing discussion forever on our show, man. So I had to make sure we put that out on Twitter, and I appreciate your input.
No problem, Mike.
That's fantastic. Hey, Mike, so another thing we want to talk about real quick before we let you go, Kentucky, man. If they beat Vanderbilt this weekend like they should, and they take care of Missouri, they're looking at a showdown November 3rd with Georgia that could decide the SEC East. And that's crazy for me to even talk about. But give me your opinion on, does Georgia lose one or two more games here down the stretch? Or is this situation where it's just kind of one-off deal? Because I didn't think they ran the ball well. I didn't think they passed the ball well, and turnovers killed them. And it's crazy for me to say this, but Kentucky is a team that can take advantage of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And I think you're looking at a situation right now that, my buddy Brandon Adams over at Dog Nation here in Atlanta, they are dealing with a bunch of people talking about Justin Fields and Jake Fromm and all the above. That's the danger of the situation. I look at Kentucky, and I definitely think they can take advantage. I definitely still kind of like Georgia's defense in that game. But Kentucky's a team I think is scary for a lot of people moving forward, and I don't think there's any doubt that Georgia's going to have to head their head on a swivel starting with next week against Florida. You get on down the line and you play, you know, possibly an improved Auburn team at that point. I don't foresee Georgia losing between now and the end of the year, but I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibly at all, because I agree with you. Benny Snell Jr., that defense at Kentucky, they can do some good things when their back's against the wall, and that's going to be a scary task for those Georgia Bulldogs.
And if Florida beats Georgia, I mean, we're starting to see maybe a three-way tie in the East, and it would come down to, you know, wins over whoever. You know, we go back in the past where rankings have come into play, where a team's ranked to see who gets that bid. So it's going to get even crazier, and I can't wait for the ride, and that game next week down in Jacksonville will be fun. Last question for you, buddy, before I let you go. Butch Jones being on the side. And look, it's not a story, but SEC on CBS is going to make it a story on Saturday when they put a camera just on him. A smart decision to have him on the visitor sideline coming back to Neyland.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think it's I don't know if you can make a right decision in that scenario, right? I mean, if he wasn't there and he wasn't invited on the trip, it would be a huge story,
too. Put him in the box.
It's just the nature of the beast right now. If they said, hey, you know what, you ought to hang back, there would be a bunch of questions to say, why did you feel, you know, that Butch Jones needed to hang back? There's no right way to go about it. I'm sure Butch Jones will put on the biggest baseball cap he can find and, you know, a big jacket and make sure he tries to stay incognito, because you guys know, like I do, up in Neyland Stadium, those people are right on top of the sideline. And, you know, Butch Jones, I'm sure he's going to hear some words from some of those Tennessee fans for sure. But Butch is a good guy. I'm sure he'll roll with it. And, you know, I'm sure that it'll be a good day for him.
Yeah, and I was just saying maybe they should put him up in the box, you know what I mean, and keep him away from down the field. But and that's more of his safety, to be honest with you, more than less than – you know, him getting heckled. It's all, you know, it's, but, you know, he's getting $8 million from Tennessee, so I guess standing on the sideline is just part of the job. So
I think he'll be fine. He'll wipe his tears away with his dollars, I'm right. sure.
My man. Hey, listen, thoughts and prayers out to everybody down in where your radio station's kind of based out of, down in Destin and Panama City Beach. I know it's been a hell of a 2 weeks for you guys, and we're definitely thinking of you guys.
I sure do appreciate it, man. There's still a drive going on at our website, wearebackroads.com. If anybody wants to donate, we are greatly appreciating that, and a lot of people affected. So I appreciate your thoughts and prayers.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Mike, tell everybody where they can follow you, buddy, and listen to your fantastic show.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at MPJohnson79, and you can find the show on that website I just mentioned, wearebackroads.com, every day from 10 to 1 Eastern time. It's a good show. We have a lot of fun, talk a lot of college football, and do a lot of the same thing you guys do. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely, buddy. Look forward to having you on next week. And if you come up to Knoxville this weekend, don't hesitate to hit me up.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, buddy. You too. Mike Johnson, fantastic interview. Somebody that won a national championship with Coach Saban. He understands everything that goes on the sideline. I thought it was good and gave a lot of context. So let's get that stare. So let's go ahead and do it. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that interview and what he had to say. It's optional. We're on Fox Sports Knoxville.
State, go there in front of that hostile crowd, in front of a surging LSU.
Why are they storming the field last week? LSU fans usually don't storm the field.
No, they really don't. They're just
LSU standards.
I mean like Tennessee fans don't storm the field, but by God, if Tennessee beats Georgia or anybody of that caliber, I mean, they're storming the field just kind of like out of you know, going through all the ups and downs of everything that has been.
If Tennessee would have beat Auburn last week at home, would they have stormed the field?
No.
A top
25 team doesn't qualify storming the field.
Yeah, I can't say that they would.
If they beat Alabama, they'd storm it.
If they beat Alabama, the stadium would come down.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like Auburn, though, no.
Georgia, they would have stormed it. It's tough.
They would have stormed it against Florida a few years back, but Tennessee made sure that wouldn't happen by having 600
extra
state troopers and highway patrol. They called everyone in.
I was actually on the sideline for that. Like, they for sure were on point for that one. They were not letting anything happen, and nobody was going to be able to storm the field or take down the goalpost. But they would have then, but they had everybody in place. I don't mind a good storming of the field. Doesn't bother me.
The things that Tennessee would do if they somehow beat Alabama on Saturday to that stadium. I mean,
oh, they'd rip the goalpost up, and rightfully
they'd
so.
They'd rip seats out.
There wouldn't be any grass rightfully left on the field.
So. Rightfully so.
Taking my seat back with me.
Rightfully so.
Cutting up bleachers. Storming Petros.
I would definitely loot Petros in the chaos.
What he thinks of.
You brought it up.
I said storming Petros.
Okay, like, looting it. I mean, well, it's not.
I feel like
far-fetched.
When you're saying someone's storming it, like in a situation like that, they're probably looting it.
Yeah, no one's running into Petros just to high five.
Let me give five Petros because we just won. Like, no, they're probably like taking.
They're
the
just
Petros.
Taking it.
Just taking my cash. Just go. You can have it. No, it's one of those.